I'd like to welcome everyone to the Region 1 Speakers Meeting. I am Cindy, and I'm a compulsive overeater bulimic, and I'm going to be your moderator for tonight. So now is the time for our speakers, and I want to introduce Leslie from Juneau. She'll speak to us for about 30 minutes. And after Leslie shares, we will open it up to some Q&A first, and then some sharing for anyone who would like to share. So with that, Miss Leslie, you are on.
Hi, everybody. My name is Leslie. I'm a food addict, and I'm in Juneau, Alaska right now. Been living here for 22 years, and I've been in program for 18 years and abstinent for 18 years, starting July in 2000. Really glad to be here tonight. I'm glad everybody called in. And we do have two people in the room with me, Bonnie from Juneau and Jean. She's my special person in my life. We also have two birds and a dog, so hopefully they won't make very much noise. I guess I'll just start with how I got to OA. I was 30 years old when I found OA, and I was really, really, really happy to find OA when I did. I had been in 12-step programs for probably at least 5 years before I joined OA, and I was in different programs trying to work on my relationship issues and was making some progress, but not much, but the men's portion of that program really kind of threw me for a loop because I didn't really know how to make amends to myself because they said to put myself on the top of the list and start with myself, and I had no idea how to do that. And so I started praying for the clarity of thought, and about maybe a month later, I found out that, you know, I had a physical ailment that was being exacerbated by the way I was eating. And my doctor told me to eat a certain way, and I couldn't do that without feeling life was going to crumble underneath me. So I came to OA, and I found out that I had this disease. And so I consider my time in OA an ongoing living amends to myself. And since I've been in OA, I've been able to work all the steps and make a lot more progress because the food was in its proper place for the first time. I didn't really realize I had food issues, and so I'm really glad that I found OA when I did, because I could have probably gone a long time longer without ever wanting to get help for my food issues. But this physical ailment was painful enough that I wanted to do something. And the 12-step way of life was definitely something I was used to, so I wanted to do that to get better. I grew up in a small town in the west, just south of Billings, in Wyoming, and I grew up with very, you know, my parents were, I think my dad was a compulsive eater. He was definitely a rager, and definitely criticized me a lot, probably narcissistic. My mom was definitely an untreated Al-Anon, depressive anxiety, anxious person. She grew up with an alcoholic parent and a very abusive stepdad. So I grew up learning how to hide and to not rock the boat and to not share my feelings and to just sort of keep to myself and never really ask for help, never really question what other people are doing, just sort of fit in. I was really good at fitting in. And I think that, you know, my parents' relationship was pretty tenuous, and so I felt like it was my job to keep them together and keep them happy. And that worked for the most part, but I think I paid a pretty hefty price for that, for feeling responsible for them and also thinking that it was my fault when they had troubles. So, you know, we've been hearing a lot about the Me Too movement these days, and I realized that I have a Me Too story, and I didn't really think much about it until just this week when I was realizing how that kind of derailed my life in some ways. I was 15, and I was at work, and a guy that I was working with made inappropriate sexual advances on me at four different times. And it really, you know, I never mentioned it to anybody except for this boy that I was dating at the time, and he didn't have any clue what to say. It was like I was not prepared to handle something like that. I wasn't even expecting anything like that. I was just starting to date, just starting to get excited about relationships and stuff, and then this guy, you know, did this thing to me, and it, you know, further pushed me into the quiet, like, okay, well, I'm just going to kind of go under the radar and not get too much notice, and I'll just, you know, handle it by being a good girl, and that's how I always handle things, and I was not prepared for this situation, and so I just, you know, I really, you know, want my girls to be prepared for anything that happens. So I have twin daughters right now, and they're 12. So I have to think about this a lot. So anyways, I go on with my life, and when I go to college, which I was, you know, 18, my mom left my dad, and this was like the worst fear of my life. And it was kind of like I left for college. She couldn't handle it. She left my dad. And so that kind of threw me for a loop, and I was in this really bad relationship, so I was just going in the loop over and over again, like just trying to fix things and feeling like a failure, and I couldn't do anything right. But on the other hand, you know, I was realizing that, you know, I want to have good relationships in my life, and so I was really trying and going to counseling and all this that. But things didn't start getting really much better until I got into OA. And my partner at the time, who's now my wife, kind of helped me find my way. And, you know, when you live with somebody, you realize what's really going on. And so she mentioned what's said a lot in the big book, the spiritual experience. The very last line is, the thing that keeps us from learning about life is contempt prior to investigation. And so I kind of took that, like, I'm not doing that. And, of course, I was doing that. So I really kind of looked at my behavior and looked at my food issues and kind of took it honestly, you know, looked at it honestly. And so that began my journey with abstinence. So immediately after I realized I was a food addict, I mean, because that's how I identify with my food behaviors, because there's certain foods that I'm addicted to, and those foods I can't control. And so I got on a food plan with my sponsor, and it was a livable plan, and just kind of been bumbling through with that similar plan for 18 years. And it's brought me to a living life in a fuller experience, all those promises that they talk about in the big book and our invitation to you. It's like a fuller living experience. And I kind of think of it as, you know, being life without any buffers, without any substances, brings everything into focus a lot sharper. So how I learned how to be abstinent was I would work the steps, and I would write my food down, and I would drink a lot of herbal tea, and I would go on walks, drink water, just do anything but eat the food that I wanted. And my doctor said, you know, sweetness, when you're craving sweetness, it's also a feeling. And it's not just a taste, it's a feeling. So can you do something that feels sweet to you? And so I would take bubble baths, and I would read really good books, and I would pet the cat, and I would, you know, that's how come I started loving herbal tea, because it was just like this warm hug in a cup, you know. And so But, you know, what I can do to be sweet to myself, which I think started my journey on really taking care of myself, putting myself in a caring position. I mean, caring for myself, because nobody else can do it. Like, no one else is going to take care of me like I need it. And, you know, it kind of brings me to a story that I went to Denver one time. And it was before Alaska Airlines flew directly to Denver, which once Alaska Airlines started flying directly to places, things got more livable up here in Alaska, because getting anywhere just took forever. And so I flew to Seattle, and then I flew to Las Vegas, and I flew to Denver. And, of course, the Las Vegas to Denver flight was like midnight, or maybe 10 in the evening to midnight. And all these strange people got on the plane and, you know, just weird behavior was happening. And then for some reason, plane got fogged out of Denver. Can you imagine fog in Denver? Well, anyways, we couldn't land. And so we were going circling and circling for hours. And finally they landed at 5 in the morning. And I get off the plane and my cousin picks me up. And he was going to let me stay at his place because I didn't have any extra money at the time. Because I was over, my pattern was to overspend, and this was new and absent, so I was trying to put my money back together, and fortunately I've learned how to do that, and I'm doing a better job with money these days. But anyway, so staying at my cousin's house, and of course he's maybe 9 years younger than me, and he's got this bachelor pad, and he's got three people living with him, and there's no extra bed. There's no couch I can sleep on because he's already got someone sleeping on the couch. So I had to sleep on the floor. And I, you know, after flying all night and going through that, I just was a wreck. And I just started crying, and I couldn't stop crying. It was just like I was just an emotional wreck. And it was because I had pushed my body way past its limit with traveling and with staying up too late and not having a good place to stay. And so I called my sponsor, and she kind of had to laugh at me, you know. I'm sure she was laughing at me from all those miles away. But it was just like, you know, nobody's going to take care of you but you, Leslie, and you have to plan when you're traveling. You have to take care of yourself, take care of your food, take care of your sleeping. And I've never... If I can avoid it, I avoid at all costs any red eye flights. So that's just, you know, the learning lesson that I had to learn when I was early in abstinence. Another physical thing I learned was sitting around the tables at my meetings, and the people were talking about how, you know, they're living with different pains, like their knee hurts or their shoulder hurts or whatever, and it's like, I don't want to live like this anymore. And so they would get the courage, and they would go to the doctor, and they would get it fixed. And I was just so impressed by that. And so as you know, I had twins, and I was I carried them full term, and they were 7 pounds and 6 pounds, and that was, it kind of threw my body, or it took my body on a journey. to tell you, and I kind of ripped it apart. Basically, my muscles just didn't heal after the pregnancy. So I finally got courage to get my abdomen fixed. And so when the girls, I think, were 9, I finally had the surgery done. And I should have done it like 7 years before that. And I finally got the courage, and I did it. And it was the most painful thing I'd ever done, but I'm so glad I did that, because now I have my belly back. And so I have muscles that can actually work. And so that really, you know, it just inspired me to see how people took care of themselves in OA, and that I could do that too. And so I do that. I'm learning how to do that every day. And it's a constant struggle, but I'm working on it. So Juneau is a small town. It's like 33,000 people, and OA has three meetings a week, and so we're a small, tight-knit group up here. And one thing we do for ourselves is we put on retreats, and we did it almost every year since I've been in OA. And I just remember the retreat leaders coming and doing retreats and just pushing me to the next level. You know, it's like, because when you're around the same people all the time, you can kind of get lackadaisical or maybe rest on your laurels and not really get the fire under your butt. So whenever we'd have a retreat leader, I would get fired up. And one time, this guy named John from Seattle came up, and he really inspired me to do some, you know, more emotional deep work with, like, family of origin stuff or inner child stuff. And so I did a lot of that, and it was kind of like step 6 and 7, just staying current with myself every day and being really intentional about how I'm treating myself and how I'm talking to myself and those patterns. And so that was really a good thing for me to do. And just, you know, it's just a way to teach myself to break the isolation and keep asking for help. And the steps have saved my life so many times in the last 18 years. When my girls were really small, it was just intense in my home. And we had very energetic girls, and we had two of them. And I was just, you know, trying so hard to keep it all together, like the family and the meal planning and the cleaning the house and my work and all this stuff, you know, and I was just trying so hard. My mind was just going crazy, and I don't really think I was that surrendered to my higher power and what God really wanted me to be doing, because I was resentful about my life. I was resentful about this beautiful life that I had, and I just think it wasn't going right, you know. It's like, oh, it's not going right. And so I can remember one time the girls were in the bathtub. They liked to bathe together when they were little, and I would just take the time while they were in the bathtub to clean the bathroom floor, because I was right there and I couldn't move. And I'm like, is this what my life has become? Like, I have 5 minutes to just wash the bathroom floor. And I was somehow upset about that. But now when I think back of it, I think, well, of course, I was being creative. I was washing the floor when I had the time. That's being a creative mother. But back then I was just like, this is what my life has been reduced to, and I was just so upset. And so that road took me pretty far into resentment, and I just was working hard in my head to try to figure out how to make it all work. And so finally I turned to the steps again, and the steps got me going in the right direction again, and I got into my own thinking about, why am I trying to control everything so much? Why does it have to go my way all the time? And so it really helped me to accept what my life was, how my life was, and accept the beauty in it, and just let go of the outcome. And I think that's where I'm at today, is just turning to my higher power more and more and more, and just trusting that is the right way. And to not worry so much about the way I think, the way I want, the way Leslie thinks it needs to go, but just to just be in the moment and trust that there's a bigger plan for life than what I can think of. And since I've been doing that, I've been so much happier. So, you know, and I think that it takes work on my part to stay happy, because I think I'm a melancholy person, and I could just be sad about everything and depressed, and I could just be the worst in everything if I didn't turn my life and will over to my higher power every day. And so I hope that gives you a little bit of story of how my life's been. I've also been, of course, really involved with service work the whole time I've been in OA. I was really involved in service work before I got into OA and the other programs that I was in, and so I learned that was a really good thing to do, is keep busy, and you get better when you're busy. And so, you know, I've been doing service, and I love it. And I love being involved at the region level, because I'm meeting so many new people and getting to know people's stories and get to go places and meet so many people, and I'm just so happy to be able to do that. You know, it's nice to get out of town once in a while. But even though, you know, it's beautiful in Juneau and I love coming home. Another thing I think I wanted to talk about was the effort that I've recently given. We always talk about, oh, yeah, I should make more calls. I should be more connected with people. And I heard once that, you know, calls are our defense against the first compulsive bite. Like when I make a phone call to somebody, or, and I think that, you know, reading literature also that, but making a phone call is a way to break the isolation. And so maybe I call people and I leave messages, and that's great. And then they call me back, and they call me back on God's time. And so I get the call right when I need the call. And so I'm making the call for that, what's the word, defense against the first compulsive bite, and I receive the call before I even know I need it. And so it's just a wonderful way. And so I've been really doing that lately. I've been making more calls, and like 2 days ago, I had to get the treasury report in for the Region 1 board meeting, and I was couldn't focus on it because I was upset about what I had talked about at my counseling appointment about this thing that happened when I was 15. And so I called a person. I left a message. I called another person. I left a message. I called a third person, and she was home, and we talked for about 45 minutes. It was kind of a long conversation, but we had a great talk. And I told her what was going on, and she told me her story, and we could, I felt so much better after that, and I was able to sit down and finish the treasury report before midnight. So that was really good. And so I just, you know, I'm grateful for this program, and I'm grateful for the lessons I learned to just slow down and take it easy and take care of myself and let God handle the outcome, and I can just do what I can do and let go of the rest. I think I'm about done. I really appreciate you all being here, and thank you for listening to my story.
Thank you,
Leslie.
Wonderful.
Thank you. That was great. So what I thought we would do, let the folks on the phone perhaps ask any questions they might want to ask of Leslie. Does anyone have a question for Leslie?
Yeah, this is Katie in Eagle River, Alaska. Yeah, my question is, with what's obviously a busy lifestyle, what kind of food planning do you do? And then if in the middle of the day that plan gets disrupted, how do you deal with that?
Okay, thank you for the question. Well, I do have a busy life, and I work hard, or I often make a meal plan for the week, mostly for the meals, like evening meals, dinners. And I make enough when I cook to have enough for lunch the next day. And that seems to work really well for my family. And if it were just me living by myself, I'd probably have canned chicken and frozen vegetables every day. But I have a family, and so I try different recipes, and I use fresh vegetables. But for my lunches, I use my frozen vegetables from Costco, throw them in a Pyrex dish, and cook them on, steam them in the microwave. And if my plan goes awry in the day, like if I come home and there's nothing ready, you know, scrounging, that's what I call scrounging. Like, oh, we're going to scrounge again tonight. Well, okay, so maybe it will be tuna salad or something. But I just think it works better for my family and for me to organize what I'm going to cook for the week and then know that I have to lot that time. And so my work schedule is a little bit flexible, so I can come home when the girls are off at school, and I can be with them in the afternoon and cook during that time. Or I put something in the crock pot in the morning. And like today, I had the chicken ready to go in the oven, and then I came home from work to put it in the oven, and the oven turned it on at a certain time because I had this cool oven that you can plan when it turns on, and you tell it how long to cook. And so when I came home from my appointments, the chicken was about ready, and I just made the vegetables. So I've been learning really creative ways to, prepare for a family of four. And if I hardly ever go out on the fly, and if I do, I always go to places that have a salad bar. So that's kind of how I handle things. Thanks.
Thank you.
Hi, my name is Liz. I have melancholia too, and I have a hard time keeping my viewpoint to sort of looking into more spiritual things. Can you talk a little bit more about how you battle your melancholy with your spiritual program? Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. I'm prone to depression and anxiety, and I am on medication for that. But it also takes a daily effort just to, keep my body moving, get some exercise. That helps a lot with my mood. And I struggled. I kind of had at that age where I was having a midlife crisis, and so everything was regret, and I was thinking of all these things. I could just go and go forever. And I actually went into counseling again just to say, I just don't have any purpose, and what's my life supposed to mean, and all this stuff. And my spiritual program, so I really started turning to my higher power and doing more of, reading of the literature on a daily basis and going to meetings and making those calls. And I realized through listening, I also listen to podcasts a lot, that it's emphasized that our primary purpose is to carry the message to the person who's still suffering. That's our primary purpose. And I was thinking, oh, come on, that's not good enough. I need to accomplish things. I need to be great, And I finally got over that, and I think I'm just fine carrying the message. That's enough. That's a worthy thing to do, and I don't have to accomplish anything. And I think that my perfectionism was really driving that and keeping me sort of melancholy, because I was never measuring up to my standards. And I don't have to have those standards for me. All I have to do is just do what God wants me to do today, and that's enough. And so you're probably wondering, well, how do you know what God's telling me what to do? Well, I don't really know. but when I turn my life, my will over to God in prayer in the morning, then I just don't worry about it so much. It's like it doesn't even enter my mind that I'm not doing enough. It just seems like everything just seems to work out better, and the outcome is better than I can imagined. So I think that it's kind of like a step 6 and 7, where you kind of just keep current on how are things going and how am I behaving and what's really going on and what's my thinking telling me, And so being more open to what God's trying to tell me instead of what I think I should be doing.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Hi, Leslie. This is Jan from Oregon Intergroup. Really enjoyed listening to your story. Could you tell a little bit about how you practice step 11 with prayer and meditation? Thanks so much.
Sure, Jan. It's nice to hear your voice. I'm really good at prayer and meditation for about 4 days, and then I forget about it for about 7 days, and then I remember again, and I do it. So I'm just really not a very, very, I have routines in some ways, but I don't stick to things very long, because I kind of do different ways of doing things. So I think that's part of what I'm trying to let go of. Maybe I just don't stick to things for very long. Besides planning my food, it's about all I can do the same every day. So maybe one day I'll go on a walk and I'll talk to God on my walk, or maybe I'll sit at the piano and I'll play through songs that we play at church, or ways to get out of myself, think about God, be in nature. I like that good orderly direction as my God. It's like, mm-hmm. just stick, you know, like do my routines, you know, plan my meals, you know, get my laundry done, a good orderly direction. And then I love the get outdoors terms of God, like get outdoors, just get outside, do something in nature. And I don't hike mountains. I don't do anything major. I just go around the block and I love it. And I, you know, it just feeds my soul. And if I'm focusing on what I can do for others and how I can be of service, then I'm more content with my life. And that, I think, is what God wants me to be. So I'm not really regimented on my prayer and meditation, but that's how it's working for me now.
Thanks so much. Love your answers.
This is Cindy. Why don't we take one more question, and then we'll move into sharing for anyone who wants to.
Hi, this is Beverly. Leslie, one of the things I struggle with is, I guess in a way it's that keeping current that you talked about. And I'm really good at turning to the steps and to outreach when I've gotten miserable. And I'm wondering if you can share any experience about getting, you know, turning to the steps and sort of nipping things in the bud. That's something I feel like I need to work on, and I wonder if you can share any experience if that's been part of your story. Thank you.
Thanks, Beverly, for the question. Yeah, I think pain is a good motivator. You know, when I'm in pain, I'll do the work. But I also noticing that if I do the work, then I feel better, and I like that feeling better part. And so it's like I'm more motivated to do it before it gets so bad. And I've made a lot of progress in this area because before our program, I had panic disorder, and I wouldn't turn to God until I was in a panic attack. It's like I didn't remember there was any spiritual help. I would just be thinking, oh, my God, I'm going to die, and then I'd say, oh, my God, I'm going to die. And so while I'm having panic, then I would turn to God, and I'm so glad I don't have to wait that long to turn to God. Because you know, panic is no fun. And it's not like you can always control it. But now I turn to God before that. And, I mean, I've even noticed that I'll just see, you know, I'll take little stray bites of food. And even though it's abstinent food, it's not really what I want to be doing between meals. And then that, to me, is a red flag, thinking, oh, well, if I don't turn my will and my life over to God today, then how am I not going to not eat that bite? It's like, it just seemed like it was just one or the other. I mean, I'm sure it's probably, you know, it's not exactly connected, but it could be connected. And so I just was thinking, I just need that protection or defense against that first bite. And so the more I knew, the more I did that, the more I noticed that I was happier and I wasn't feeling so awful. And then I would kind of groove on that for a while, you know. So I guess the staying current part is, you know, it helps me when I'm talking to people, like when I'm regularly talking to my sponsor or talking to my friends. And I've been going to counseling every 2 weeks for a couple months, so that helped too. I had someone to talk to about it. So I think, you know, just having it built into my life with the appointments and the talking with people has helped a lot, too. Thanks, Beverly.
Thank you, Leslie. That's really helpful.
Well, thanks, everyone, for their questions. We have probably about 10, maybe 12 minutes or so left tonight on our call. So I'm going to go ahead and open it up to sharing, perhaps on something that Leslie, I might ask you to perhaps just throw out a topic.
Sure, a topic. I would love to hear people's ideas and thoughts about breaking isolation and reaching out. Thanks.
Hi, this is Liz. May I share, please?
Yes, go ahead.
Hi, this is Liz. I'm from Oregon Intergroup. This is going to sound I'm not sure what the word is, smug. I don't mean it to sound this way, but get a dog. I have a dog that takes me around the neighborhood when I'm too shy to go. And when somehow it's okay to walk a dog rather than walking by yourself. So I meet my neighbors that way, and now they call me the mayor of 14th Drive because I've gotten some people together because I've gotten to know a bunch of people from up and down the street. So it's not something that you want to do on a spur of a moment, but we have one, and it just so happened that when we moved to Portland, we didn't have a backyard, so I had to walk her several times a day, and that made it so that I got to know people, and I ended isolation that way. I'm also pretty good about calling people on the phone just to lay groundwork. I really like what Leslie said about doing it before you need it, and it's always a little bit like, oh, do they really want to hear from me? Do they really want to, you know, take this call? But typically they do, and it's always sort of a nice surprise, continuously a nice surprise. Thank you.
Thank you, Liz.
Beverly, can I share?
Yes, go ahead.
I really like the topic, and lately I've been, you know, I have Bluetooth in my car, and I do have 4 to 5 meetings a week that I go to that are about 10 to 15 minutes from my house. And so one of the things I do is before I leave my driveway, I get somebody on the phone, and I just am talking to people on the way to my OA meeting. And I've realized lately that my phone is full of numbers from all over Region 1. And so I call people in my own intergroup, but also around Region 1. And I usually just start those calls with, you know, I needed to make an outreach call and was looking through my phone and your name just jumped out at me. And most of the time I'm not calling because I need a call right now. You know, sometimes that is the case. But I'm just trying to do what I tell my sponsees to do, which is have a network. Build your network of support. And it's becoming kind of a habit. You know, before I leave my driveway, I get somebody on my Bluetooth in my car, so I'm legal. Not touching the phone in the car in Oregon, which will get you in trouble. And I'm just really appreciating the connections. I feel like I'm building connections with people that I only see sometimes at assembly and convention. And I just have a lot of gratitude for those connections that I'm building. Thank you.
Thanks, Beverly. Would anyone else like to share?
My name's Elise, and I am a compulsive overeater from Vancouver Island.
Hi, go ahead.
On isolation and reaching out, you just have to do it, and it takes me to be the we of the program. I have to take the first step and reach out myself. Thanks for having a guest speaker tonight.
Thank you. We have time for one more before we close.
Yeah, this is Katie. I'm a compulsive overeater in Eagle River, Alaska.
Hi, Katie. Go ahead.
The topic of isolation and reaching out is a big one for me. Since I retired 3 years ago and have been in the process of kind of rebuilding my life and how I want to spend my time and what I want to be when I grow up, I've just been back to the program actively for about 7 months, and I don't know what it is. It's a new experience for me this time. I think I finally did enough research, and, you know, I'm really starting to feel that spiritual journey that, and I'm experiencing it on the inside. But it, the hardest thing for me is picking up the phone. It weighs 50 pounds. And sometimes I find that sending a text message is a good first step for me. I don't know what else I was going to say there, but this is a difficult issue for me, and I live alone, and so a lot of times I need to fight pretty hard to break out of being alone. And I'm certainly grateful for the program and for all the folks that are working it, saving my life.
Thank you. Well, thank you, everyone, for your questions and for sharing. And I just really want to thank everyone for calling in tonight so we could have a little meeting on the phone. Thank you, Leslie, so much for sharing your story. It was terrific, and we all, you know, got just a ton out of it. And I think that I will ask Jan to close us in the Serenity Prayer again.
And I would be glad to.
Thank you.
Okay. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and wisdom to know the difference.